This is On the Block with Brent Axe.
Oh, voice man ain't lying. Welcome back, or welcome aboard. Great to have you here. You're on the Block ESPN Radio. It is presented by Turning Stone Resort and Casino, the lounge with Caesars Sports, now at Turning Stone Point Place and Yellow Brick Road Casino. I'm sure our next caller is pretty much a VIP at those places. Now my man Scooter in Jamesville wants to talk some Syracuse football with us. Scooter, you like Norm at Cheers when you walk in that place? Scooter! Hey!
Yeah, you're right. I have to go incognito, you know, between me and Seth, you know, I actually send Seth in first, so they all grab around him, and, you know, and I can sneak around the block, you know?
There you
That's
go.
Great.
There you hey, go. What's
speaking,
on your mind?
Speaking
man?
Of On the Block, I assume you're going to be taking your show On the Block to the biggest block party down at Shaughnessy's on Friday?
Is that I will be there. We
yeah,
are doing
right.
this show slash our pregame program, 4 to 6, same time, getting ready for SU Pet Friday night. We're looking forward to it.
You know, I tell you, I heard you earlier talking to me about the 6-6. Now, X-Man, you know, I mean, athletically, outside maybe Florida State, I don't see us being, you know, any worse than the teams we're playing. I think it's going to come to execution. But their quarterback, Pittsburgh, is almost a statue. I think if we're ever going to get a pass rush against Pittsburgh, this would be the week. And I feel real good that she's got a good shot. You know, we already faced Lawrence and Clemson, and we've kind of made him pedestrian, you know, three interceptions and made him a little uncomfortable in the pocket. I think we can do the same thing this week. And, you know, I'm looking at the other teams. I smell at least a 7-5 record still easily to go, maybe 8-4.
Certainly attainable. And that's why I don't want to put any labels on this game Friday. Scoot, thanks for the call, my friend. I'll see you either at the lounge with Caesar Sports or Friday at Shaughnessy's, my friend. The ACC is so wide open, and Syracuse has every game left on the schedule qualifies there. They fall in the category of teams that are kind of in that 2-13 range. There's two truths, and not a lie. There's two truths in the ACC. Clemson's the best team, and Georgia Tech's the worst team. Everything in between is a giant shoulder shrug emoji guy. I don't know. Now, Pittsburgh has one of the best pass rushes, not only in the ACC, but in college football. That's a problem when you have an offensive line that gave up 26 sacks this year. But I'm going to put my faith in Coach Babers and this team.
Thanks, Brent.
You're welcome, Coach. Dino Babers Show tonight, Press Room Pub, 7 o'clock, over on Brostat, TK99. Did I mention the Press Room Pub brought us a pizza burger? Pizza burger! It's a pizza! It's a burger! It's one thing! I am so excited to eat this. Anyway. They know this and will hopefully find ways around this, getting rid of the ball quicker, utilizing the running back, scaling back your offense, finding ways to at least minimize the damage. Pittsburgh not only has a great defensive front, we're going to talk to Craig Meyer later this hour about this Pittsburgh team, but their secondary is great. Like, this is the vision of what Pat Narduzzi wanted to bring to Pittsburgh. But Scooter just said it. I like Kenny Pickett, but you can get to Kenny Pickett. Last year, Pitt beat Syracuse with this two-headed monster approach in running the football. They can't run the football this year. They have two receivers, Taysier Mack, and Maurice French is a good receiver, but they have two receivers that have like 90% of their catches. Offensively, Pittsburgh, now they put up 33 against Duke. They put up 35 on UCF. They can score, but they're not anything to write home about. This team is defensive-based, getting turnovers, putting their offense in good position, and it is going to be a challenge for this offense to beat this team. But I don't want anybody, you know, with the mindset that Pittsburgh is like on the Clemson level of unbeatable. Of course that's not true. Florida State. Now, Florida State's got athletes, and Florida State's got Cam Akers. The teams that really give Syracuse's defense trouble are teams with good running backs. And good running games. Well, Cam Akers is one of the best running backs in the country. And you've got to find ways to minimize the athleticism of Florida State. But Florida State is a mess by Florida State standards. Boston College at home, November 6th. I brought up the running back thing. Yeah, it's A.J. Dillon, he's He's decent. He's aight. Then you have a bye. So in the next three games, if you can, I mean, ideally win two, but even if you only win one of those games, you have a bye week, and then you finish at Duke, at Louisville, Wake Forest. Now, Duke has been all over the map this year. Louisville, that was an eyebrow-raising win over Wake Forest in an offensive game, to say the least. But I would not qualify Louisville at this point this year. Maybe by November 23rd, my opinion will change. But that, to me, is still a toss-up game. Wake Forest is good this year. Wake Forest has one of the best young quarterbacks in the league. They're almost the Syracuse of 2019, particularly if they keep this up. So that's not going to be an easy game to finish out the year, but it's at home. So I've recalibrated my record. I had 9-3. If I'm going to think about it, I'm going to go based on what I've seen as opposed to some preseason prediction where I'm trying to forecast the future and it's just a giant cloud in my crystal ball. I think 6-6 is attainable, and Scoot said it, I think even 7-5. I wrestled with that. But what I keep coming back to is, you know, if we're going to do the cliche sports talk radio thing and give grades out here at the midway point of the season, and let's do that! Professor X, class is in session. Offense, it's a C-. It's a C-. Your offensive, now I understand, as a professor, but any teacher knows, like sometimes there's a built-in reason why your students or student is struggling. Health can be a reason. Kid's been out sick a lot, falls behind, is trying to make up for it, working his butt off, doing what he or she can, but you're still not up to where you need to be. Syracuse's health on the offensive line has been in flux, particularly Sam Heckel. And I think we've got to stop building up like Sam Heckel's the magical potion if he comes back that will fix this offensive line. I like Sam Heckel a lot. Just the fact that he even gets on the football field, considering what he goes through off the field, which we've documented, his rare blood disease and the process he goes through every few weeks just to do it. It's admirable, but I think we've got to stop saying, well, if Sam Heckel was there, none of the problems would exist, because the main problem is on the left side. Your main problem is Carlos Federello. Your main problem is your young player and your right tackle that you got as a graduate transfer that you thought would be better than this can't hold down the ends. So Tommy DeVito is running before he needs to. He's has a habit to roll to his right, and he's trying to overcome. Remember earlier in the season, the big thing was throwing the interceptions on the sideline. Well, he's trying to eliminate that. He's trying to run when the running plays are there. He's trying to find open receivers, and even the ones that are open, he's not finding all the time. Just the offense is frustrating. I even contemplated a D. But I'm going to go C-. The key to raising your grade, because remember, this is a five-week report, technically six. This is not the grade. This is, you have a chance to improve on this, kids. The running game. Now, this is not an easy thing to do when your offensive line's a mess, but what I want to see this coaching staff do, and I think this is a midseason tweak you can make, is be more creative in how you run the football and how you use your running backs, period. Just get the darn ball in their hands. Even if you have an aggressive blitzing defense that's going to, pardon me, that's going to kind of collapse in on those plays, well, then that gives you a chance to use your tight ends. That gives you a chance to get Sean Riley involved. That gives you a chance, and I hope that Tommy DeVito is spending more time. We saw the blow-up on the sideline with Taj Harris. Taj Harris has beef. He had good reason to do that because he's open. So the offense at this point gets a C-. The defense gets a B from me. I don't think there's much more you can ask a defense to do under the circumstances. They would have a B-plus or an A had it not been for the Maryland game. The Maryland game was a disaster. A big surprise. A startling thing that happened. I still can't believe that game was a thing. Losing to a Big Ten team on the road, that happens. Losing to a Big Ten team on the road by 43 points in week two. A Maryland team, by the way, who has gone off a cliff since then and is just an average team, I believe. Someone correct me if I'm wrong, that Josh Jackson's even been, has he been benched or is he hurt down there? I'm not entirely sure on that, but Maryland did not turn out to be this juggernaut that maybe they were ranked. Remember that? So was Syracuse, by the way. Remember Maryland was ranked? So beyond that, Alton Robinson and Kendall Coleman are getting pressure. Andrew Armstrong, Lakeem Williams are racking up tackles. I think they're getting better. I think the concerns about that position aren't completely gone, but I think you look at it and say, okay, they're doing what they need to do. The secondary, despite the injuries to Andre Sisko, to Ify Melifonwu, I think is holding down the fort. The takeaway streak is still alive. This defense is keeping them in games. The NC State game is going to sting. If it comes down to it at the end of the year, whether you need to win a game to be bowl eligible or not, because defense put you in a position several times to win that game, let alone what happened in the fourth quarter when they made the big stop and gave Syracuse the ball back. I think it's pretty obvious to say special teams is an A, if not an A+. Lou Groza Award winner, Andre Schmidt, has missed one field goal and one extra point. How dare you? 88%, that's still a pretty good percentage. Sterling Hoffrichter is in the conversation to be the best punter in college football, which I know is not that sexy to talk about, but that's field position. When your offense is struggling, at least you have a punter that is going to at least make it a little more difficult on the other team's offense to take advantage of the failings of your offense. So I don't think I need to spend a lot of time on that. I think we're all in agreement there. I'm not going to get much pushback there. The offensive MVP is absolutely Tristan Jackson, and there is no debate otherwise. It's certainly not the quarterback, because I think he struggled enough. Things that are on him, by the way, things that are not his fault we can discuss, but things that are on him that I'm not quite going to give you the MVP. It's certainly not any of the running backs. It's certainly not any of the receivers. It is Tristan Jackson by a long shot. 6 touchdowns, that's half of DeVito's 12 touchdown throws so far. The kid is always open, short range, long range, middle of the field. As the great Keyshawn Johnson once said, just get him the damn ball. Defensive MVP, doesn't have the numbers, but Alton Robinson's your defensive MVP. Constantly drawing double teams, fighting through that, that opens up things for other players on the defense to take advantage of that. And when he does do his job, which he's still doing despite the constant double teams he faces, forced to be reckoned with. I pondered Andrew Armstrong there because I think he's made steady improvement through the year, but there is no doubt who the best player on this defense is. And as mentioned, my recalibrated record, if you're asking me to forecast how it's going to go from here, having seen 6 football games with 6 to go, I'm going to go 6-6. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that they find themselves, make some improvements, go 7-5, dare I say still go 8-4, and give people at least somewhat of the season they were hoping for before the season. But that's why you play the games. And preseason predictions can be foolhardy. Let's learn more about this Pittsburgh team that's coming to the Dome Friday night. Craig Meyer is on the beat for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He joins us next. Stay right there.
This is On the Block with Brent Axe.
An appropriate bump right here as the Dolphins will make us cry during Hot Takes. As we welcome you back here on the Block, ESPN Radio. It's presented by Pathfinder Bank. How you doing?
You and me, we come from different worlds.
Let's get to it. I got takes. They're hot. They're burning. They're ready to go.
We've got a hot one for you.
Oh, you're hot.
Why, thank you. So are you. And I'm not afraid to cry. So hot.
So hot and burn. Yes, sir!
Man, it's hot. How hot is it? It's so hot, I poured McDonald's coffee in my lap to cool off.
It's time for Hot Takes on the Block.
New York's premier resort destination. Come on, you know this by now. You know it, you love it, you've been there. You eat, you drink, you win, you do the thing, you get all the sports action you crave, you catch all your favorite teams. The Lounge with Caesar Sports, that's where. It's now open at Turning Stone Point Place and Yellow Brick Road Casino. Congratulations to CNS grad, Syracuse native Patrick Corbin on the mound. Nice performance as well. 12 strikeouts as the Washington Nationals sweep the St. Louis Cardinals 7-4 and have moved on to their first World Series in franchise history. And they did it very convincingly, not only sweeping this team, Steven Strasburg, Patrick Corbin, and Anibal Sanchez, 8-2, 2.04 ERA, 88 strikeouts in this postseason. The Nats, the fourth team in baseball history to reach the World Series after being at least 12 games below 500 during the regular season. That's incredible to think about, but it's not that far away from another team that did a similar thing. Let's not forget that the St. Louis Blues, at the start of the year, were the worst team in the National Hockey League and won the Stanley Cup. The Nationals, going into June, were 19-31. You know who else had 31 losses at that time? The Detroit Tigers, who went on to lose a whole bunch more, but the Nationals turned it around, got in the postseason. At no point during the NLCS did they trail, and they had the lead for all but five of 36 innings. Now, the big question is, because the game one of the World Series is not till Tuesday, can they beat either the Astros or the Yankees? And I think that Washington's going to have an early advantage. Get everybody recalibrated. You know, the rest versus rust thing. I think this is going to help the Nationals because the Yankees and Astros are postponed tonight, so there's no travel break. Now, that's good for the Yankees, I think, because you don't want the bullpen game. Now Tanaka can start game four on full rest. So can Zach Greinke, by the way, but I think that's what you want. So Greinke in game four, Verlander in game five for the Yankees. We mentioned Tanaka in game four, Paxton in game five. They're going to be duking it out and going at it until pretty much right on the verge of the World Series. That series is going seven. For the Nationals, they are kind of riding a wave of momentum, but they also have the we're not supposed to be here factor, which is dangerous. This team, you can see they get along. There's chemistry. They have great starting pitching. Obviously, all the players in the lineup, they're the oldest team left in the postseason and one of the older teams in baseball. It's incredible to think about that Bryce Harper is not a part of it, but I've brought up the stat, and I'll say it again because it just continues to boggle the mind. The 10 highest-paid players in Major League Baseball, one of them made the postseason, and that was Clayton Kershaw, and we all know what happened to him. I just love where we're at here because either the Yankees or the Astros are in the World Series, and those are the two best teams in baseball, and they deserve to be there, and he kind of had this upstart National League team, this upstart national squad that they're just fun to watch. There's a local connection there with Patrick Corbin, so it all works out here. Baseball's fun, kids.
That's hot.
I want to hear what's wrong about baseball. There's discussions that maybe the ball has been de-juiced now. I don't care. Don't want to hear it because I am enjoying postseason baseball. Talk to me on November 1st about this stuff. Right now, let me watch baseball. Big baseball move made today. Joe Maddon, hired by the Angels. A three-year deal worth $12 to $15 million. Maddon, who's 65, by the way. My man's looking good for 65. Remember, came from the Angels organization, spent 5 years as Mike Socha's bench coach, won the World Series in 2002, left to manage Tampa Bay, of course, before going to Chicago, winning the World Series there with the Cubs. And now he comes to a team that, frankly, should be better. He has the best player in baseball at his disposal, and you expect the Angels now to be relevant and contenders. Hard to be in Los Angeles, but look, there is opportunity here for this Angels team. You've got the most dynamic, personable, and one of the best managers in baseball in Joe Maddon. You have the best player in baseball in Mike Trout. The Dodgers, I'm sorry, I know they're an institution in that city, and they always will be, but they choke on their own vomit every year. Seven straight years, they have lost not only series that they were favored in, but lost early. They got to the World Series last year and got smacked by the Red Sox. Don't you know it? But why all the Dodger love? Forget history. Forget all this stuff. The Dodgers haven't won a championship since 1988, and all they do is fall short. There is a chance for the Angels to sweep in here, and you're not going to take over the city. It's kind of like the Clippers taking over the Lakers. It's not going to happen, but people are so reliant on history. In the here and now, the Angels could be better than the Dodgers if they play their cards right. By the way, if I'm betting on a team to win the NBA title, watching the Lakers and Clippers go at it, it's going to be fun, don't get me wrong. I'm going with the Clippers. Big move, great move by the Angels hiring Joe Maddon, no question about it.
That's hot.
So you're telling me Ryan Fitzpatrick is a starting quarterback in Buffalo, New York again?
Big time!
asking, Brent, why are you playing a clip of a screaming child on the radio? That was not a screaming child. That was Ryan Fitzpatrick. That is known in Bills fan circles as the Fitz Scream. That was a play where Fitzpatrick
the Bills make me wanna
beat the Miami Dolphins. How things come full circle. So the Dolphins, poor Josh Rosen, by the way. Can we put Josh Rosen on a good football team, not one of the worst teams in football a year ago and the tanking Miami Dolphins this year? That's a little topic for a different day. Here is Dan Orlovsky basically saying, what are you doing?
What did they expect from Josh Rosen? Like, that's my biggest question. What did you expect from him? Your team is absolutely decimated. Did you expect that he was going to come in and throw for 350 and three touchdowns a game?
Like, he might have. Yeah, apparently,
right?
They did.
That's like, is this something that?
Sorry, Dan.
Let's go, Buffalo.
Okay, continue.
Idea what they're doing right now. We have a very clear understanding of what the front office is doing, but we don't know what this team is doing right now.
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills.
I am afraid of this game now for one reason, not Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's a good one. No, I am afraid of this game now because you recall a year ago, the Buffalo Bills were 16.5 point underdogs to the Minnesota Vikings. And what did the Bills do? They won that football game. You know what the Bills are favored over the Dolphins by? And if you want to put a little wager on this at the Lounge with Caesar Sports at Turning Stone Point Place in Yellow Brick Road Casino, 16.5! I'm officially worried about this game now.
That's hot.
Not because, I mean, just play it again. Like, I'm not worried about that. Now that's going to come back to haunt me. Fitz magic, baby. Never doubt the Fitz magic. Why exactly is this happening? And I know that's an expression that can be used for a lot of things in the world, but can somebody please explain to me? Now, and I saw a Syracuse tweet about this today. And what Syracuse tweeted about was graduation success rate. And Syracuse Athletics graduation success rate is 93%. So student-athlete success at record levels at Syracuse. There you go. That's great. Now, here's what I want to understand. As noted here by Steve Berkowitz of USA Today, this is not from The Onion. This is a real thing that has happened. Alabama coach Nick Saban picks up a $100,000 bonus as the Crimson Tide football team's new NCAA graduation success rate, 84.6%, puts it among the top four for all SEC football teams. Wait a minute. What does Nick Saban have to do with this? Please explain to me why this man gets a bonus because student athletes were, you know, students. Are you telling me that Nick Saban was helping with chemistry homework? Does Nick Saban do tutoring in his off time? Was Nick Saban, you know, okay, guys, here's a film review on our next opponent. Okay, now everybody get out your textbooks and please turn to chapter 5. Why is Nick Saban getting a pretty healthy yearly salary for a lot of people because his football team graduated and had a graduation success rate? You're a football coach. You're paid to win football games, recruit football players, keep things going on the football side. Now, I understand they're student athletes. There has to be oversight. They have to be eligible to play. It is part of your job. But excuse me, why are you getting paid $100,000 because your students did their work? I hope that's not a case at Syracuse. I would hope that Dino Babers, Jim Boeheim, anybody else you want to put in on this list does not get a graduation success rate bonus because you had nothing to do with that. If your team reaches certain milestones, hey, good gig if you can get it. If it's in the contract, they sign the contract, they want to pay you the money, God bless America. But please do not tell me that giving college athletes their name, image, and likeness rights will cause chaos, but we can give Nick Saban $100,000 for doing nothing. Because your team went to class, you get $100,000? No, no, no. Stop it. This is just another in a long list of the reasons of hypocrisy and ridiculousness when fill in the blank, Mark Emmert or anybody involved in college athletics, we cannot pay these student athletes. There will be chaos. You can give Nick Saban $100,000 because his team went to class? No. Sorry. Don't want to hear it. La, 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 la. I know, that's very insightful commentary there. La, 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 la! It's ridiculous, though. Speaking of grades, oh, what a transition. Our midseason Syracuse football grades and recalibrated record, second half predictions. It's all coming. It's all coming. Stay tuned. Craig Meyer's going to join us next hour. He is on the beat for Pittsburgh, for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. The Blind Side, Top 6 Wednesday. Wake up the voice, guy.
Number one.
Presented by the Press Room Pub. By the way, do you know what our friends at the Press Room Pub have brought me today? As our friends at the Press Room Pub have been so gracious to bring us some delicious food off their menu every Wednesday to try when we do Top 6 Wednesday. Two words for you, kids. Pizza burger. It's a pizza, it's a burger, it's both. I am so happy that this exists.